Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Team Broadcasting.
You're inside the Cafe Mahadi with your host, TCN Cook, the place where we talk about what we don't talk about. For those of you that could not join us inside the cafe, we still want to hear from you. The number to call is 516-595-8113. So pull up a seat, order a drink, and tell us what's on your mind.
Ready or not, here I come. You can't hide. Gonna find you and take it slowly. Ready or not, here I come. You can't hide. Gonna find you and make you.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Cafe Mahogany. You're on live with Tiki and Took. Took, are you there? Well, it sounds like it's just me. So welcome to Cafe Mahogany, where we are talking. Okay, you there? Thank you.
Yes, how are you, T?
I am good.
Good. Technical difficulties, but I'm sure you can hear me well.
I can hear you well.
Great, great. So how was your day today?
Busy. A lot going on, but a lot got done. So.
Okay. Well, you know, as we usually do, I want to open the show with something. Like, there's a glaring issue I think you know I want to talk about. I'm going to ask you, did you enjoy the NC2As this year?
I did.
Okay, did it turn out
No, it did not. I am a confirmed Duke hater.
Okay.
I own that. I don't mind owning that. I hate what I hate. I love what I love.
All right.
So it didn't turn out as I had hoped, but I enjoyed the series. I enjoyed the dance. So, and I'm very proud of the players on Duke's team. It's
okay.
Not. I mean, it is their fault that they picked the wrong school to commit to, but. That doesn't make them any less talented. You know, Jones and Allen and Okafor, they were a joy to watch as individual talent. They were. They could have picked a better school to represent, but, hey, they're young. They're entitled to make mistakes. You know, they're allowed. And they won't have that kind of choice once they get to the NBA. They'll be traded and drafted as needed. But, this was an opportunity for them to make a good choice, and they did not. But we're going to forgive them because, you know, they're young men and they deserve a second chance. So,
you know, people talk about analogies, and that analogy of water and oil just could never be any more true. I mean, here's another analogy and another reason why you and I are just basically water and oil, because I love Duke University. I am a very proud actual, not only alumni, but I am a current online member of Duke University. And I was very excited to see my Blue Devils win their fifth ring and get one for the thumb. And very happy for Krzyzewski and very happy that it drove the Duke haters crazy. So, had a great time, and you know, I'm excited about them. But again, as you said, I was very happy for the young men because as they, you know, they're good to talk about, you know, the one and dones. But there is a young man, that guy Cook, who stayed for 4 years. And,
yeah,
Right. He finally got his championship. So I was so happy for him.
Yeah, yeah. What a story. Yeah, that was really good. Yeah. Yeah, but the whole oil and water thing, this isn't the first time I've questioned your taste. So.
Yeah, I think that's documented.
Okay. So as long as we know, as long as we understand. But, yeah, Cook, I mean, that whole story, I like it. You know, I was happy for him. The way Alan just, the passion that Alan played with. I posted it, I think. I was like, is there anybody in that building with more passion about winning than Alan?
He was just
all in, you know. Right. But I said at the beginning of the game, whoever, and this was any competitive sport, whoever wants it the most will walk away from it with it. But Wisconsin had pure, raw talent, right? Mm-hmm. And so did Duke. But the desire to win was bigger in Duke. And
I don't offer
any congratulations to Duke or anything like that, but whatever. It's over.
You know, you talk about that story with Cook goes deeper than, you know, really what they covered nationally, but he really deserved that because the guy that ended up getting MVP for the game, you know, of course, was a freshman, but Cook had been the point guard for 3 years, and he kind of stepped aside to allow this youngster to come in, and it made him a better team. And they ended up
because the Jones is a better point guard. I mean, the got ice water in his veins. He's cold blooded. You know, it was the biggest moment in his collegiate career on the biggest stage in college sports for basketball. You know, football, and he just stepped up and just knocked him down. I was watching when he hit the dagger from three. I was like, this is over. You know, that's just over. And then he had been playing. I think he has a larger, more developed maturity in basketball. Because I was listening to them say how in eighth grade he played for his high school varsity team, and you can see that leadership maturity in him, and the way he was a general on the floor. So you know, I just had to, you know how I admire talent, you know. I don't like Boston, but for the longest, you know, Rondo was my baby daddy. We're not going to get into that.
right.
But, you know, point guards, like, do it for me for basketball. So.
Right. I just thought it was commendable, you know, for Cook. You just don't see that today with today's athletes, with today's young athletes. You're the starting point guard, and you're being told that, you know, I've stayed here 3 years, I'm going to stay for a fourth, and this youngster is going to come in, and I'm going to step aside, and I'm going to do what's best for the team. So it took a lot, you know, to do that with all of these one-and-dones, and, you know, everybody, you know, is all about the immediate talent. To see a guy that stuck around for 4 years, got his education, but stayed there for 4 years and saw it to the end, and then it crescendoed with a championship. It was just a lot. It was appropriate to me.
Me too. I like it. Yeah. I like the story. I don't like the team. We're going to move on from here.
So it wasn't Duke. I wouldn't mind Wisconsin winning.
But it
was Duke, so I knew you and
I think the last time we had this show and you asked me about it, and I was like, I really don't get engaged until the Sweet 16, you know. And I was like, oh, Kentucky, I think Kentucky will take it. And then I started to pay attention, and I realized Kentucky was seriously flawed. I'm like, Kentucky is not ready. They're not going to do this thing. I knew they weren't. Duke, I hoped that they wouldn't. It was different with Kentucky. I knew that they weren't going to. So, that Notre Dame game was just like, I was like, oh, wait. So, that was not how Kentucky had hoped that it play out. But, you know, I always enjoy March Madness. It is the madness, and I like it.
And it's madness because a lot of folks lost a whole lot of money.
They did, including a 12-year-old kid that won the actual ESPN bracket. I needed to go back and read that story.
12 years old.
But he was too young to play, right?
He was too young to play. You know, I think the criticisms that's coming out, because you know how people are, is that one of the parents should have snatched that bracket and made those for him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know. So it's all, you know, after the fact.
If our 12-year-olds play basketball, right, I think they should give him his money. He won.
Right, he won. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Give him his money. So,
right. Put it in a fund or something if they don't, you know, they want to be.
Until he come of age, and then they'll have grown interest, and he'll have more than the $20,000.
Give
the kid
his
money, though. I may
write
ESPN when we get off the show tonight. Like, give this boy his money.
Give him his money. Yeah. So, I mean, that's an interesting segue, because tonight we're going to talk about money. And
we are talking about money.
Yes, we're going to talk about money, and we'll talk about a lot of things that we do wrong with money, and how heading in the right direction and doing right with money is not as difficult as we may make it out to be. So I'm going to go ahead and ask all the callers out there, those who are interested in calling in, and either making a comment or joining us for the discussion. You can join us at 516-595-8113. I ask, please, that you do call in, but please do not use earpieces, because it gives us an incredible feedback that you wouldn't imagine. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about money. We'll be right back after these messages.
You're inside the Cafe Mahogany with your host, TCN Cook, the place where we talk about what we don't talk about. For those of you that could not join us inside the cafe, we still want to hear from you. The number to call is 516-595-8113. So pull up a seat, order a drink, and tell us what's on your mind.
Are you a business owner looking to expand your business nationally? Well, join the hottest internet radio network, Team Broadcasting. Advertise your business or organization on this program or others. Choose from a winning lineup: Selma Toro's Baseball, Toro Talk, Bridging the Gap, The Lonely Hearts Cafe, and Cafe Mahogany. We look forward to partnering with your business to help you grow, whether it's locally, regionally, or nationally. Contact us for more information, 334-505-1940, or send us an email at yourteambroadcasting.com, 334-505-1940, or yourteambroadcasting.com. We look forward to partnering with you.
Inside the Cafe Mahogany with your host, TCN Cook, the place where we talk about what we don't talk about. For those of you that could not join us inside the cafe, we still want to hear from you. The number to call is 516-595-8113. So pull up a seat, order a drink, and tell us what's on your mind.
Go back. We're back here with Cafe Mahogany. We're going to talk about, we're talking about money tonight. And once again, this is a topic that falls under our umbrella of those taboo topics that we talk about that we really don't talk about. So we're going to talk about how it is that we have such difficulties in our culture with managing our money, with investing our money. Just why is it that we particularly as a people have such challenges with dealing with money? Tiki, why is it that, in your opinion, that you think we have such issues with handling our money?
In my opinion, and I guess that's really all that it is, a perspective, my humble opinion. And I have to make that question very personal in that I was never taught anything about money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just wasn't. I didn't know enough. There was nothing structurally in school, and I am an advocate for getting that changed in school systems, especially in inner cities and in rural areas. There was nothing there. There was no, I think like in the sixth grade, we learned how to fill out a checkbook. And there may have been a single lesson in school about compound interest and how it's calculated, but nothing about money and personal finances. And I was a full-grown woman in my 30s when I started on the journey to learning about money when I decided I cared enough to look into it because I, even with my credit, you know, I had the attitude that you can't get what I ain't got. You know? Even with that, for me, there was an absence of personal responsibility. You know, I can't lie and say that I wasn't making the money to pay my bills, you know. It's just that the money I was making, I didn't know how to manage. I didn't know what to do with it. Right. And it was leaving me and going to someone who could manage it, and thus I was always broke, even though I never perceived myself as being broke because I was working. I know I made a decent income, so I knew another check was coming, but technically I was broke.
Technically, you were broke. You're right, and you know, you know what? You said it. Well, in the sense that, you know, you learned, you said in the sixth grade, you learned at school how to fill up a checkbook. But, you know, when I look back over it, just as, you know, a society of people, there is an element of us who also learned about finances and credit and learned a lot of negative or wrong things about how to be fiscally responsible. Some of us grew up learning to play with credit and, you know, take out as many cards as you can and get all that you can, and you don't ever have to pay them back. And that's a mentality, honestly, that people even entertain today. And there'll never be a date of accountability. There'll never be a drop-down date. They just magically send you these cards, and you can go run up these balances. And it's free merchandise or free money. And, you know, but what happens is you become of age. And the sad part is, you know, when I look back at it, so many of our young people are up against it. A couple of weeks back, we talked about the generations and, you know, the baby boomers, the Generation X, and now our millennials. And they're, you know, our past generations didn't always do us good in that sense, because there's so many youngsters that grow up against it before they turn of the age 18. Tiki, there are so many whose parents have taken out credit in their baby's names.
Right.
And when you turn 18, you already in the hole from somewhere with your social security number. It teaches us bad habits, and a lot of our children, when they become of age and they want to do better, they have a hole to climb out of already.
You know, about the generational things.
Yeah.
Of course, we are in Generation X, and our parents would have been baby boomers. And then you had the generation, and I can't think of what they were calling right now, but our grandparents. My grandparents' generation, the ones that could, a lot of that generation were sharecroppers, right? They were only
right.
a generation removed from slavery, maybe, some of them. Not every Black American ancestry was slavery. I'm not saying that. I'm not generalizing. I'm saying for a lot of people, though, that was the reality.
Right.
And that particular,
right.
particular generation was sharecroppers. Well, there were others that weren't. Some of them that had made their way in the world. And my grandmother and grandfather was of a generation of people that paid cash for everything.
Right.
They didn't, you know, the houses and cars were paid for. And
my God,
our parents, the baby boomers, are the credit generation.
Right.
That is where, if you go back and do the research, historically, that is the generation of financing houses and cars and having credit cards and having a real popular store back in the day was Woolworths, you know,
yeah.
Sears, these places. And baby boomers, as adults and young adults, went and got credit at these places. You know, and credit came about with the industrial age, manufacturing,
right.
cars. You know, you had auto industry on the rise. Credit became a very real thing. And since they are the, I don't know, innovators of credit, I don't think they ever got a chance to dissect the pros and cons, what kind of monster it could become.
Right.
And I don't know how, when I look back on it, I'm like, did they expect us to learn by osmosis, right?
Right.
I know in the Black community, a lot of people that have knowledge about money in Generation X and so forth sought it out. They were fortunate enough to have somebody sit them down and say, hey, you're doing money wrong, which
mm-hmm.
is what happened to me. You
mm-hmm.
know, all of your attitudes about money are just wrong. That
right.
attitude that I had about my credit was just wrong. And I wasn't, like what you were saying, you know, I didn't thankfully learn that level of irresponsibility, just go out and get credit cards and charge up some stuff. Thankfully, that was never part of my education. I just never had an education, good or bad. You know, it's just what the information just wasn't there.
Right.
And so, yeah, I'm glad I'm glad I didn't have what you're saying, because that was like just, who does that?
Oh,
but,
yeah.
Tonight, what, you know, I am hoping that can happen is that we have a dialogue about practical matters
mm-hmm.
as it concerns money, and hopefully listeners, if we have any, or callers, if we have any of those, will come away with a feeling that this is not a seminar. This is not
exactly.
some, you know, financial guru. This is real people that have known real money problems and
right.
are making steps in everyday life to eradicate those, to
Correct.
Take personal responsibility for money matters. I mean, and there's so much to talk about. There are payday loans, there are mortgages that people really think that you take 30 years to pay a mortgage is mind-blowing. And when you learn these things or understand that what you, the little bit you do know about money or what the world tells you, society is telling you about what it takes with money, you understand that it's not tailored for you to succeed.
Right.
You know, it's tailored for the rich to become richer and for you to work until you're 65 and get a second job to support your retirement.
Wow.
You know, hopefully we can have the conversation tonight that has people rethinking their financial position in life.
Right. That is so true. It is orchestrated for you to work until 65. And what'd you say?
Right.
Get a side job.
Get a side job. Like, I need to work to supplement my retirement is what's happening to boomers right now. Baby boomers are going through this thing where either their children are taking care of them or they are getting jobs to supplement their retirement and working until their 70s or they die, whichever comes first, you know? So,
you know what, I think it's amazing. One of the things that people are, is, you know, and we'll talk later about, you know, the specifics behind it, but the mentality, when you talk about a mortgage, and that just hit me, people, it's built in for the fact that it takes 30 years to pay, and it's just not true. You know, but, I mean, that's the expectation going in. And a lot of it is, you know, as we, those of us who hadn't had that education in early years on how to be fiscally responsible, I think one of the hooks that gets reeled in is, you know, that little thing of little bit down, little bit a month, right?
Right. yeah.
Right, you know, so and we're a culture of people of, you know, we even name TV shows after it now, the haves and the have-nots, right?
Have-nots, mm-hmm.
Right, so it's like it's so important to present a front like you have, but the dangerous part behind it, Tiki, is that you don't even realize you can't afford it. And,
well, let's stop right there and talk about that for a moment about what you can't afford with your mortgage, right?
Right.
Let's put a pin right there. Let's talk about that for a moment. So, I have a cousin that's a couple of years older than me, and I've been helping her with her process of buying a home, right? And she'll call me and we'll have these conversations and she'll be like, okay, how did you go through this? What did you do here? What did you do there? And I explained to her, I was explaining to her the importance and the absolute necessity of getting in the biweekly program once she closed on our house with her mortgage. And she was like, you know, I've got to pay my mortgage twice a month. I was like, no, what happens is, you pay half of your mortgage on the 1st, and you pay half on the 15th, and they're automatically drafted from your account of your choosing.
Okay.
She said, okay, but how does that work? And I said, what will happen is you'll be making 13 mortgage payments a year as opposed to 12. And just if you did nothing else on a 30-year mortgage, if you did nothing else, just that little piece of the program, it takes 7 years off of your mortgage.
Oh,
it reduces a 30-year mortgage by 7 years. And she was like, okay, all right. So, and we got into the affordability conversation. And I told her, I said, listen, if the bank or mortgage company, they're going to look at your credit, they're going to look at your income, and they're going to do a debt to income ratio.
Exactly.
And based on that, they're going to approve you for a certain amount of money for your home. By that standard, you can afford the home that you buy on paper, okay?
Right.
Now, if you're lying, that's something else. But if
right.
on paper, the amount of money that you can borrow to purchase your house
right.
is what you can actually afford. So you right. can afford the house you buy. Not only that, there that whole myth. So let me take you back. Let's go back to the beginning, because I want our listeners to understand like all of my mistakes, right? And
okay.
how they are ongoing and still a challenge.
Right.
At 38, I decided. At 38 years old, I decided I wanted a house. I'm like, okay, you're not married, you don't have any kids. What are you gonna do with yourselves? And I was like, okay, I make good money. I want a house, right? So just
right.
waking up deciding you want a house is just that, waking up deciding. It does not mean it's about to happen like that. I got a realtor, and I called my aunt. My aunt has been selling homes in Orlando, Florida, well over 20 years. I called her and said, hey, aunt, we either want to buy a house, da-da-da. And I was like, I have a realtor. And she was like, who is your realtor, and how long has she been, you know, doing it? And then she said, no, that's not your realtor. Hold on, I'll call you back. And, you know, I felt some kind of way, because here I am 38 years old and my aunt is like, your choice for a realtor isn't good enough, right? Basically
yeah.
what she was telling me. So
yeah.
She calls me back and she gives me a name and a number. And she was like, call this lady. And I'm, you know, I'm thinking, is this somebody you know? And she was like, no. She's like, I researched her. She's in your area. She's been selling houses for 3 decades, and she knows what she's doing. I'm like,
yeah.
okay. So, and it turns out it was like the best decision in the world, right? So this woman comes to get me, Ms. Harrison, and we talk. We have a conversation, and in the conversation, I'm beginning to realize just how much stuff I don't know about changing demographics, how about how populations shift through cities, how neighborhoods
right.
change, all that. I had never considered this stuff. I just wanted
right.
to buy a house. And
just
all of a sudden, right. So, Madison, all of a sudden, here's this other stuff, right? I'm like, what? You know, I'm looking at houses in all kinds of neighborhoods. She's like, no, you don't want to live there. She's like, in 20 years, your house is not going to be worth anything. You're not going to. You know, it's going to be burglarized, and you're going to want to sell it, and you're not going to be able to get it. I'm like, what? So
right.
from there, I'm like, okay. So we start on the journey. She takes me to a bank, and she was like, you need to fill out a loan application, get all your paperwork together to see where you are. I can laugh now, but my
right.
feelings were hurt. Okay?
Exactly.
My credit score was in the, like, lower 500. Okay.
Right.
And the loan officer all but laughed me out of the bank.
Wow.
Right? So it became a pride thing. My feelings were hurt. You know, here I am, 38 years old. I'm gainfully employed. I have nothing, right?
Mm.
Nothing, not even a credit score to recommend myself.
There you go.
So we get back in the car. And Ms. Harrison says, you know, I'm thinking, okay, the loan officer has laughed me out of the bank, Madison. My realtor is about to drop me and probably call my aunt and tell her off for wasting her time, right? This is what I'm thinking is about to happen. So Ms. Harrison says to me, we're going to spend this next year while you get your credit together looking for your house. You are an intelligent woman. You can do this. You need to make up in your mind that you want to buy a home and make up in your mind that you want to fix your financial situation.
Right.
And I'm sitting there like, okay, my heart is beating fast, right? Because this is fear. This is real fear. I'm like, for the first time in my life, I'm alone in the world in that I am the only person that can fix this, right?
Yeah.
Right. So, and so it started. And I didn't know, the woman at the bank did me a service. She gave me a copy of what the bank saw on my credit report. But then I went home and I pulled my credit report from all of the bureaus. And I set out on a journey, Malison, of doing the work.
Right.
And that's disputing things I genuinely didn't know about. That's writing letters. That's making deals. You know, all the things that you and I have talked about before of you know, getting on the phone saying, you know, I know I owe you seven. I got three. Let's make a deal. And it took, and while I'm going through this and I'm thinking that it can happen really quickly, and it doesn't. And you start talking to people and you realize it takes months for your score to do this creep. You know, this thing where it goes slowly up and up and up, and you're watching it like a hawk, like it's a meter, right? You know, you've been there, don't you?
Daily.
Daily, right? So you're watching it. And at the same time, this woman that didn't know me has absolute faith in me that I can do it. And so I'm like, not only do I want to fail myself, I don't want to fail her because she believes that I can get this done.
Right.
And so I have medical bills because, you know, in 2004, I ran up a medical man, and I ignored it. You know, I was like, man.
Oh, of course you did.
I ain't got that kind of money to pay the hospital. They can't get what I ain't got. And I didn't worry about it, so I didn't pay them. And I know there are a lot of people that can relate to that. I had medical insurance, and I still had huge medical bills. It can be done, and I didn't know that it could be done. I thought that the numbers that was on my credit report as IO, I thought I had to pay that amount, you know?
Right.
And I'm like, there's no way I'll be paying this forever and ever. I'm never going to have a house. What came next is I fixed my credit. I got my score back to where it needed to be. And then I sat down and I wanted to cry because I'm like, you're 38 years old. You're about to take on a 30-year mortgage. So you want to work till you're 68 to pay off a house? This is your first house. So you're going to buy your first house in your dream house all in one house, right? And I'm like, I just did all this work, but I'm not about to buy this house. Because I am not about to work till I'm 68 to pay for a house. Who does that, you know?
Right. Most of America.
Right. And I'm thinking all of this stuff about how I waited too late, how I wasted my life thinking I'm bohemian and I'm drifting and, you know, what have you done with yourself? All of these things. And I have a friend. A lot of us have resources in our life that we don't know anything about, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a gentleman that lives in Detroit. He's in his late 60s, maybe early 70s now. We've been friends for some time. And I called him. He owns several Century 21 businesses and mortgage companies in Michigan.
Okay.
And he's a realtor in a few other states. And the first thing he told me was, don't talk to people about money that doesn't have any.
Right.
I was like, okay, you know. So he was like, you know, all of the people you're talking about with 30-year mortgages are trying to take 30 years to pay their mortgage, right?
Right.
I'm like, okay. So he said it only takes 7 years to pay a mortgage. And everything in my being rejected that information. The first thing I was saying, you know, was ain't no damn way. You know, 7 years. And so the first thing was out of my mouth was, I don't have that kind of money. You know what I'm saying? To pay the house off in 7 years. He's like, it only takes 7 years to pay off a house. That's all it takes. And 10 if you want to do it comfortably. If you take 30 years to pay for a house, the house is not going to be worth what you pay for in the end.
Mm.
And I was like, okay, so how do, and we're going to take a caller and we're going to talk about, after we get to hear this comment, we're going to talk about how that works.
That's Deborah in the 415 area code, San Francisco. Deborah.
You know, I was listening, and I was thinking to myself, who takes 30 years to pay off a mortgage? That was my thought. Secondly of all, I don't really think people try to pay off their mortgages so much as regard them as I have, and probably stupidly, have regarded it as more like money in the bank. I have to have a house. I have it paid off 3 times already, and I could care less if I ever pay it off again. I kind of have the concept that it is better that I owe the lender than the lender owes me. Probably a stupid concept. However, it has worked for me. I find that in paying it off 3 times, I've only owned my house since 1980, and it's been paid off 3 times, and I've mortgaged it as much as I wanted to, when I wanted to, how I wanted to. And I live in the San Francisco area, so the houses are kind of expensive here. But not only that, I have, and I am of the retirement age. I'm 64, so I do understand that concept, too, of working to get another job and all of that, but that's not something I want to do either. I just want to do nothing when I retire, and that's forthcoming. However, the seven-year concept, I don't know if I did that so well, but I wasn't far off, and I don't have money.
Well, Deborah, it sounds like you did something very well. I mean, I think where Tiki is trying to get us to, and it's kind of, you know, I mean, I like the way my grandmama used to say, she might be wrong, but she ain't far from right. What Tiki is saying is getting us to, with the mentality, to it doesn't take 30 years to pay off your house. I mean,
no,
you say you didn't pay off your house 3 times.
Yes,
so,
since 1980.
You know, so, you know, we're saying the same things, but where Tiki and I is trying to get most of us, and most of us within our culture to, is in a mentality, get out of that mentality that, you know, they have you in this bondage situation, and that, you know, in that sense, it kind of discourages us from buying a house, because until even I personally learned this possibility and this concept, I always grew up believing it takes 30 years to pay off a house. And who really wants to do that?
Nobody, but I never thought it took that long, even though I took, at one point, I would take a 30-year mortgage out. But then I'd, like, pay, like, $500 or $600 extra on the principal. And, you know, I mean, if you were going to buy a new dress, you'd do pretty much the same thing if you wanted that new dress. I mean, we just are bred that way. We weren't raised with money, and we don't know how to handle something we don't know anything much about.
There you go.
But you get to the point that you don't want to be tied up with this because you're moving on, and you want to do something else with your money. So you learn ways to do it. And after that, I would take, like, a 15-year mortgage, no matter how much I mortgaged my house for. If it was $300,000, I'd take a 15-year mortgage, and I just pay extra on it.
You pay extra on it, right?
Yeah, I mean, you just pay on the principal.
Yeah, like Tiki said right there, we're going to borrow that from the Davis. We're going to put a pin right there. you said you put you would put extra on it, right?
Now, yeah, I pay like on the principal.
That's what you and Tiki did. But see, the issue at home is, and the taboo issue, which, again, we going to talk about what we don't talk about, is our people are infatuated and drawn to the fact of little bit now, little bit later. So that whole issue with credit, whether it be a mortgage or especially with credit cards, that dress that you like, and then from my sense, from a man's sense, that $300 suit to go with them $200 shoes, you can charge that $500, and you can pay $25 a month on it.
If you like gators, you can buy a house.
There you go.
So, Deborah, here's my question for you. Are you retired now?
I'm getting ready to retire, I think in August.
And you will still have a mortgage?
Yeah, but I pay what I pay now. It's not. It's kind of minimal, but most of it goes to principal. But I only owe like $65,000 on a house in San Francisco.
Well,
right.
Yeah, right.
I think where we are trying to get to here is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are a lot of people that don't understand that it does not take 30 years to pay a mortgage, and that's very new information for a lot of people.
I don't think anybody ever told me either. I just figured I got something else to do, and I was of the mindset that my entertainment meant a lot to me too. I like good entertainment, so I had to be freed up for that.
So yeah, and that comes back down to personal choice and personal responsibility. My point is, for the majority of Black people, is that we do money wrong. We stay in the cycle of always paying for something and never having or ever achieving true wealth because we don't know what to do with money. And I don't want to be 65 years old or anybody, a damn thing. I want to be the one to sign the front of a check. I'm giving people money, but I don't want to owe anybody anything. And the point of this show is to say we need to change how we do money and we need to build wealth because as a people in this country, very few of us own anything, our own individual possessions. So, Deborah, thank you so much for sharing with us. We want you to stick around. We're going to take a break because our producer's back. We're going to take a break. And when I come back, we'll finish talking to the listeners about the advice I got about paying off my mortgage right after this.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
You're inside the Cafe Mahogany with your host, Kiki and Cook, the place where we talk about what we don't talk about. For those of you that could not join us inside the cafe, we still want to hear from you. The number to call is 516-595-8113. So pull up a seat, order a drink, and tell us what's on your mind.
Are you a business owner looking to expand your business nationally? Well, join the hottest internet radio network, Team Broadcasting. Advertise your business or organization on this program or others. Choose from a winning lineup. Selma Toro's Baseball, Toro Talk, Bridging the Gap, The Lonely Hearts Cafe, and Cafe Mahogany. We look forward to partnering with your business to help you grow, whether it's locally, regionally, or nationally. Contact us for more information, 334-505-1940, or send us an email at yourteambroadcasting.com, 334-505-1940, or yourteambroadcasting.com. We look forward to partnering with you.
You're inside the Cafe Mahogany with your host, TCN Cook, the place where we talk about what we don't talk about. For those of you that could not join us inside the cafe, we still want to hear from you. The number to call is 516-595-8113. So pull up a seat, order a drink, and tell us what's on your mind.
We're back talking about money, Cafe Mahogany. Once again, if you'd like to call or comment, hit us at 516-595-8113. No earpieces, please. Tiki, you know, and we talk about this money issue tonight and great avenues about being responsible with the money. But, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. I just witnessed and helped a brother with H&R Block get his return. I watched this brother get $3,200 back,
mm-hmm.
and wanted to get a big screen TV. But that's strike number one. But the mentalities, here we go. Strike number one, he wanted to use it. Let me get this right. He wanted to get a big screen TV for the Mayweather fight and invite everybody over. I seen the brother cash the $3,200 check and walk in Rent-A-Center and get a TV for $40 a week.
Stop.
That is a true story.
Right.
Why is our mentality so messed up? How do we? What is it that we're missing?
We're not. It's not misinformation. We don't have any information, and we try to keep up with the dictates in society, right? You want to invite friends over and have a fight party,
right?
Just like anybody else, and you know you can't do that on your 32-inch TV, right? So
you don't want them coming over to no 32-inch, yeah.
That's the whole keeping up with the Joneses,
right.
Need, and that, and I'm glad you brought that up because it speaks directly to the advice that Mel gave me when he sat me down to have a conversation about money and this mortgage. And to continue on where we left off when we talked to Deborah, is to say that there are some very specific things he told me to do.
Right.
And my goal, the central goal, was, yes, to pay off the mortgage in 7 to 10 years, but it was to get to a state of mind where I wanted to start building wealth,
right,
where I was still of an age to work. So I had heard people talk about how having a house would give you a tax break, right?
Right.
And so he goes, you know, when you see how much interest you're going to pay on your house in the first year,
right,
you're going to be glad to pay it off, and you're not going to mind paying taxes. You're going to be like, the hell with the tax break, you know?
Right.
I paid $11,000 in interest my first year in this house.
My mom.
$11,000 in just interest. Just interest. So taxes, if without a tax break, with no mortgage, I would have paid between $700 and $1,200 to the IRS for taxes. But instead, I paid $11,000 to the bank in interest. Mentality. Our mentalities are wrong. Our mentalities are just wrong, you know? So what he told me to do was to get in the program where you pay on the 1st and the 15th, half of your mortgage on the 1st and half on the 15th. And that reduces your mortgage term by 7 years. Mm-hmm. Then he told me, because you have this house, because your income is what it is, you're going to get an income tax refund every year.
Good.
Take that refund, write a check to your bank. Don't go online and pay it. Don't pay it in any of your normal venues. Write a check. On the bottom of the check, write, this is for mortgage payment number 360. Because we all know, if anybody that has a house and a 30-year mortgage, you receive an amortization schedule in the mail from your financer. It says, be here for 30 years, you have to pay us 360 payments. And this is the amount of every payment, right? This is how much you're going to pay.
Right.
So those last 50 to 100 payments are almost pure principal. So I didn't understand. So he went on to tell me, he said, write them a check. Look on your amortization schedule. Find payment number 360. Write them a check for that amount and write on the bottom for mortgage payment number 360. He was like, if they send it back to you, call me. And I was like, why? He said, because if they send it back to you, you're going to sue them and your house is going to be paid for anyway, because that's against the law.
Wow.
Right? So I'm looking in the mail every day. I want that check back. Again, mentality, right?
Mentality, so,
right. So, and he was like, if you have enough, send them a check for number 359. He's like, you get bonuses from work? I said, yeah. Chop up your bonuses. Write it for, send them a check in the mail for 358 and 57 and 56, whenever you get extra money. And I was like, why am I doing that? He was like, you're burning the candle at both ends. He was like, you're paying more interest in the first 10 to 15 years of home ownership because your interest is compounding off of what on the end. He was like, but if you eat up what's on the end, there's nothing for the interest to compound against.
Wow.
So you're burning the candle at both ends.
Mm.
And you're going to pay your mortgage off faster. It's going to accelerate.
Right.
And I got excited. I was like, what? You know? And he's like, yeah. He was like, what you want to do is make sacrifices for the end result. You want to sacrifice now and be comfortable later. He said, we have a mentality of work hard, hard, until we're 65 years old and then try to enjoy life. You want to start enjoying life right now.
Right now. Right.
You know, you want to start enjoying life right now.
Right now.
So I started, you know, he was like, it's just you, right? I was like, yeah. And why would you furnish that whole house? I was like, because it's my house. I want my house furnished. He's like, here's that mentality again.
Right.
He was like, homeowners furnish homes for family and friends for a showpiece to impress.
That is true.
He said, you only have one posterior. How many chairs can you sit in at a time? Right?
Correct.
So I'm like, oh, okay. You know, I'm like, all right. So it's starting to make sense. Light bulbs are coming on now.
Right.
It's like the furniture you already have has been sufficient for your current living situation before you bought the house, right? I said, right, that's true. He was like, so that furniture is still enough. That is still enough furniture.
It's still enough.
He said, so imagine, and now it's the next Wednesday, will be 5 years into my plan to pay off this house. So that's how time has flown, right? So he said, imagine 7 years from now, walking into any furniture store, buying anything you want without having to sit down and calculate how you're going to pay for it.
Right.
You have a house, but you don't have a mortgage. You don't have a car note. all you owe is utilities and taxes and insurance.
Right.
But you're gainfully employed.
Right.
Okay. You know, so my thinking is changing. He's taking everything I thought I knew and believed, and he's twisting it, and then he's unraveling it. Right?
Right.
So he's changing, literally changing my mind.
Right.
Right. So this, I haven't gone and taken some 4-year course on accounting and financing, and there's some great education, right? No, I'm a woman that didn't know anything about money. They took some advice and has started to implement it.
Right.
To actually how often do we use, we ask people advice, but how often do we use it?
Right. See, you know what? It's something I want to go ahead and give away for free. But, you know, listening to what you're saying, and I want to keep folks encouraged listening to this. It don't take for you to own or be approaching this with a mortgage. You can start this right now.
Right.
You know, what Tiki is talking about making half of your payments, start doing that with your car payment and watch how much interest you save. And if you said every 2 weeks you took half of your $200 car payment, and just, you know, assuming that you finance in a, you know, they have a lot of these little broke-down car dealerships where, you know, 10-year-old Hondas and Nissans that people for people with bad credit. So,
well, let me say something about that before you give advice on cars.
Yeah.
The financing is different because when you take out a car loan, with a car loan, they loan you a specific amount of money to pay for that car, and you already know what the financing is. You know what I'm saying? And they'll tell you it'll take you 5 years at $800 a month, and you make this amount of payments, and you're done, right?
Right.
With a house, they're only going to loan you what the house cost.
Right.
And that is, so, like, if you're buying a $200,000 house, when you pay for it, it's going to be like $495 or something crazy like that, right? But with your car, they're going to go on and assess your interest at the rate you qualify for. Let's say it's 6%. Whatever 6% is on your $32,000 car, then that's how much the bank is going to loan, including that 6%, and that's what you got to pay back.
Right.
I recommend paying off a car, you know, doubling down on the car notes or whatever. But
go.
I don't think the interest compound in the same way it does for a house. It's slightly different.
Depends on which loan you have. If you have one of these very bad car loans that you get from Fred Lawyer or they have that out with that. But whatever the case is, these people compound interest on a daily basis. You know, depending on you cutting up your payment, reduces your balance basis just that much lower than if you paid once a month.
Right.
So you should go ahead.
I happen to know somebody that is about to pay, that is paying about, will end up paying about $38,000 for a $12,000 car because they won't listen. Yeah.
Right. So, but again, it falls back to that mentality. It allows me to drive right now. And I hear what you're saying, Sister Tiki, because you're saying requires something that I can't afford right now, which is called sacrifice.
Right.
And the sacrifice will put me through, which will put me through humbling myself and take a little public transportation or, not drive how I'm used to driving. And that's
right.
That's one of the biggest catchers right there that, I can't drive. That's kind of beneath, and you don't realize that that's where your income bracket says that you are right now. and continue to force the matter is why we find ourselves in these fronts and these sort of things that end up costing us huge on the back end. And it's, you'll never be treading water. It ain't even the beginning stage. You are sinking so fast and you don't realize it. But the point is, there is an element of us that don't really care, you know, because as the caller had said before, kind of underlining what I got some underlying things out of it, is there is some folks that feel that they want to die owing somebody.
Right.
And that's a mentality that's out there, is that, you know, not taking into effect that, you know, that money doesn't just magically go away. Your siblings
right.
and are responsible for what you left behind.
Right.
You know?
Somebody
yeah.
got to pick that up, yeah.
Somebody mm-hmm. got to pick that up, but it won't be me. So, you know, that whole mentality of constantly owing, but you never truly get anywhere because you're, you know, it's a very sad scenario that whatever it is that you insist upon and putting yourself in that fronting position, I can't say we all been there, but I will say I've been there and I've grown from it. But one morning you can walk out and it won't be out there.
Right.
You know, if you insist on doing money wrong, you know, and it takes some situations like that for you to learn to do money right. And as you said, I heard you say before, the most difficult is getting that person to actually listen.
Right.
You know, they can actually even listen to the words, but are they hearing you?
Right. So
put that
Malice,
into action. Yeah.
We have a caller from Washington State.
Is that Washington, D.C.?
Washington State, Malison.
The state. Oh, I'm just thinking about home. Washington State, you know.
Yes.
Caller, do you have an earpiece or a speakerphone? Because if you do, we're going to get bounced back, so.
Okay, no, I'm not on speakerphone. Phone here.
Okay, we can hear you now. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry, but yeah, I just want to comment and add on to what the brother was talking about. It comes down to the culture and what we're taught. discipline is key because if we can afford something, if we can afford to pay our bills and still afford to, quote-unquote, splurge, then that's what we're going to do because we're comfortable.
Yeah.
Not knowing that we can, you know, pay bills and be fiscally responsible and still be comfortable. I think we have a misunderstanding of what comfort is.
Right,
and,
right.
As you said earlier, it goes down to comes down to sacrifice. We're not willing to sacrifice because I think we as a people are not totally understanding what it is that we need to be working toward and working for, and that's, you know, owning our own things, not disposable items like, you know, rims, speakers. I want to do this. I can pay my bills, but I also want to do this. But, you know,
right.
that vanishes, that perishes over time. And just like you said, it begins with education. You have to educate, even if they don't want to listen. You have to keep preaching it to them. You have to show them how it works and show them that it works.
Oh, wow! What'd you just say? Show them. Show them.
I
yeah,
am personally trying. You know,
yeah,
it is my plan. It is my intent to have. I want to go like. Right now I'm a part of I Am Selma. I want to be able to walk back into my high school and
right.
put this model up and say
right.
this can be done. And I want educators in Selma to make personal finance a part of the high school curriculum. It is necessary. It is necessary to change our financial reality. And that change, I would like to see start in the education system at home. And when I mean home, when I say home, I mean in Selma. I want to see that come to fruition. So if it takes doing this myself and going through the growing pains as a woman alone, achieving this to show them, then I have every intention of doing just that.
See, and you know what? And as the brother, what you were saying before and what Tiki just said, you know, it won't be effective until it's attractive. And that's my point.
Right.
Is that
right.
It can't be attractive with our words. You have to show me something. Otherwise, you talk me sacrificing, and all I hear is I need to go without because it's in my best interest. Show me.
Right. And here's the thing. I'm talking about sacrificing, and I'm on this program to get things done, but I'm not uncomfortable because I live and die by a budget, you know,
right.
And that budget includes comforts, you know.
Right.
It includes
right.
being able to go to the movies and restaurants and buy books because I'm a reader, you know.
Right.
But does it include Prada shoes? Hell no. Don't. And Gucci bags? Absolutely not, you know. And it won't ever. Even when the house is paid off, it won't include those things because those are the wealthy getting richer off me, and that's just not going to happen, you know. I'm not uncomfortable. I'm going to tell you what my sacrifice looked at like in the beginning when I needed to fix my credit and pay my bills. My sacrifice looked like no cable.
Mm.
It looked like there was no cable up in this piece.
Mm. Right.
And, you know, a lot of other little things we take for granted, like, guys, let me tell you something. And I know people use blessed in really loose and casual ways. But for the 16 years I've been employed with the company I work for, 11 of those, they have paid. I haven't had a phone bill, a cell phone bill for 11 years.
Amen.
But
wow.
That is one of the cell phones, if you do the research, is one of the things that keeps the poor.
Exactly.
So if the company I work for wasn't paying this AT&T bill, when I was going through my sacrifice stage, that would have looked like Boost Mobile for me because I understood that I had a goal. I had things to do. But I'm not in here being uncomfortable, and I want people to understand that sacrifice means not doing what you know you should not do. If you don't have the cash to pay for it, then you can't afford it. That's what that means.
But you know what, Tiki, you had said earlier about the mentality, and our people have to understand the mentality. You said a very key word is trying to put yourself in a wealthy position. And
right.
Our people have such a problem with understanding the mentality of rich versus wealthy. And our people, you know, rich is a bunch of stuff.
Right.
And wealthy is the avenue to continue to generate your money.
Right.
And exactly, for your money to make money for you. Not a bunch of stuff, not something to drive, and whether it comes down to our most common level, you know, whether it's cable. There's some folks, mouses, who can't live without HBO, or three sports channels, and all these other things, and before you know it, you've got a $300 cable bill. And that's not something to absorb when you're trying to create wealth.
Right. Go ahead, Courtney.
I'm sorry. Not to mention that a lot of our peoples, they blur the lines between necessity and you know, comfort. I have to have this,
right.
Or I need to have this. You don't need to have 100 channels. How many times are you going to watch every channel Like the brother said, how many times are you going to watch every channel? And even in a month, you may watch 10 of those channels.
Right.
You know, you have to, and it comes down to being fiscally, they don't know if they're not educated, if they don't have that model to go by, that blueprint, that process, you know, then they will never get it. And if they don't see it working in the short term, we tend to give up. We tend to say, you know, I can, I don't really need to, I've got all this money saved up. Let me go ahead and use it toward something that I'm not going to use 5 years from now. And that's
right.
That most of us have.
But, you know, even with this, with what Mel is teaching me about money and building wealth and paying off this house and getting out of that cycle, it's practice. I still have to work at it. It's not some perfect science because I had 38 years of a different mentality. I've only had 5 years of the right now. And I live and die by budget, but guys, let me tell you something. It takes work every day. I have to be committed to it. You know, it's the law of use or lose. You know, practice makes perfect. And so the more I practice the things that I have come to believe, the stronger I get in them. And that's something I want to convey to our listeners tonight. We're not talking about, I'm not trying to convince you that this is easy, that you can just wake up tomorrow morning and change. You cannot. It's a process. What you can do is wake up tomorrow morning committed to changing not only your mind, but your situation. And that's what it took for me. I knew if my situation was going to change, I needed to change my mind.
Right.
And what I should have done at the start of this show was ask people, if you're listening, to get a piece of pen and paper. And good thing about this show, you can go back and listen to it. But there are seven. I am a person that believes in all things spiritual. And for me, there's nothing more spiritual than numbers. Even biblical matters teach us about seven, how life and changes happen every 7 years, how things change. It's a very powerful and spiritual number, even in biblical terms. And really, most religions, you'll find that to be true, that they the keys to the universe involve numbers and mathematics. But there are seven laws that I have written down in journals, in different books that I go into, on the refrigerator, and I learn them, and it takes practice. God, it is hard, but the law of cause and effect, the law of use or lose, the law of correspondence, of substitution, of belief, of attraction, of compensation, those seven laws right there govern everything. They govern everything, and if you go, I learned through him how the book of Proverbs in the Bible can teach you about money. And I was like, wait, what? You know, and I also learned that Dave Ramsey teaches that as well. That's a part of his wealth building principles, to use the wisdom in the book of Proverbs to govern how you do money.
All right.
And one last thing, since we're there, one last thing I want to share about belief systems and philosophies. In this journey, there's one thing, one philosophy that I've developed that is mine, and I believe it. And that is, there are two things that could be your guiding principle to achieving wealth in this life. and that's greed or kindness. Mm. Greed, if you want to work hard, you want to hold on to what's yours, and you don't have any interest in the welfare and the well-being of your fellow man. You can be wealthy that way. It won't be satisfactory, but you can be wealthy.
Right.
And the other one is kindness, which lives under a passage from Luke that says, to whom much is given, much will be required.
Amen.
And in my journey, and even though every day is a struggle to follow the rules, to apply the principles, I don't ask God for new ways to make money. I don't ask him for more money. I don't ask him for anything. I only ask one thing in my daily prayer, is that I am made a good steward, that the things that I have been blessed with, that he teach me to be a blessing. And when I tell you guys that that has been like a overflow in my life, it's like everything I try to do, everything I attempt to do, I find success in it, because my reasons for doing it aren't coming from a selfish place. So for me, I can clearly see that there are two roads to having achieved any level of wealth in life. You can take the road of greed, or you can take the road of kindness, which says that you own some responsibility in your life for the well-being of your fellow man.
Well,
yeah.
Amen.
Wow.
No. Yeah. So, that is.
You'll be all right.
I'm taking the backup.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I'm about to take the collection. But that
no,
is right.
No,
on
don't point. Do that. Because you know what?
No.
That's gonna put. Look, do not do.
No,
let me
no.
tell you. There was somebody from Michigan.
No.
Look, somebody was here from Michigan the other night. Listen to this now. They were here from Michigan the other night, and I was talking. It was a couple, a family.
Okay.
It was
okay.
Man and wife and their son. And I was talking to them, and they were like, oh, this is a beautiful house, da da da. And we got to talking about that. And they're real religious. They're some kind of sect. I can't think of what they are right now. I asked them, but they did tell me. But anyway, he was like, oh, sister, that was a good word. We need to pass the plate. Oh, and it kind of just, it like infuriated me, right?
Okay.
Because that is the kind of thing that kind of ticks me off with churches, right? Because y'all know, right, I don't do church and I don't do prosperity preachers and I don't do preachers, period. Is that, and I was like, do you really think that the information that I just shared with you that I would ever want to be paid for? And he looked kind of taken aback, right? And I was like, that is kind of my problem with churches and how mega churches and prosperity people kind of do their thing. I was like, that when you mail the information that Mel shares with me, that he's teaching me, he's a wealthy man, and he's never charged me for any of it. And that's why when people look at me like, girl, you should be counseling folks. You should be charging for this. What? I didn't pay for it. I don't want to be paid for it. I didn't pay for it. It was given to. It was a blessing to me, you know.
Right.
So, man, when you said that, I was like,
No.
But I know you were kidding. But I'm just saying, you know.
No, well, you know, I was kidding, but you know, at the same time, you know, since just you know, give me 15 seconds. The point of the matter is that you said in the beginning before you started talking, you were a spirit-led person. And you got your point across with a reference of a biblical source. So in doing that, you know, we understand and we understand your approach and your unique outlook in that you don't want to charge. But we are living in a world of people who this is priceless information. And they will pay. They're willing to pay not for the information but for your efforts and your labor and putting it all together. So I'm just going to say that. But, brother, did you have another comment before we start sign off?
Yeah, I actually do. I'm thoroughly enjoying this conversation. I've been listening for a while. It's actually my first time listening in. But caveat on what you guys are talking about, specifically what we just heard, the information, those of us who know the information, if we can just give that information, at least initially. I mean, there's nothing wrong with capitalism. There's nothing wrong with, you know, making a living. But if we can just give that information to those who need it, who can't
afford
it, you know, maybe it will lift us up as a whole. But on the same token, they have to be willing to listen and hear and apply the information that we give.
And brother, what you're saying, and we do need to recognize, we are living in a society that is enamored with, I don't really want to do it. Can you? What will it take for you to do that for me? And you know, when Tiki start talking about kindness and all this stuff, before you know it, you got 20 to 30 kindness issues lined up. You ain't gonna be able to do that. You know, do all the work for them, so they're going to have to be referred to someone who charges for those services, even though they know how to do it themselves. Some people just, you know, can't go about calling up these people and doing it for themselves.
Let me ask you this. When I was talking about kindness, I certainly wasn't talking about that I would do the work for anybody, because as you know,
yeah, right.
I won't do it. I will not do it.
Right. You got to do it.
No, I'll tell you how to do it, but I will not, because I know that you don't value it the same unless you do it yourself. But to Courtney's point, you know, you got to be willing to hear the information and receive it. And that's why it's something that I don't ever tire of. And, you know, since I am Cafe Mahogany, just like I am Selma, I have made the executive decision that we will talk about money some more next week.
Okay.
So, Courtney and Took, come back, same time, same place.
Tribulation, but I know God. They didn't want to put me in a bow tie.
Pray that the holy water don't go dry. Yeah. I can look around me. So many motherfuckers want to tell me. Well, they will never tell me. In front of a dirty double mirror, they tell me. And I love myself. The world is a ghetto. They do as a dick. You know the miserable, do love company. What do you want from me and my scars? Everybody lack confidence. Everybody lack confidence. How many times my potential was anonymous? How many times the city making me promises? So I promise this.
I love myself.